from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Happy Monday, April Fools. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. We've done so many of this. I know a lot of people keep count. I don't, but we're like at episode like 800 or 900 or something crazy. Like, I don't know. I was looking at something this morning and it was like 890 something. I was like, I've done 890 of these. That's insane. Didn't think I have. It always feels like I've only done 100. But without further ado, we've got a busy packed show for all of y'all today. It's been a really, really busy weekend, Easter weekend. Hope everyone enjoyed their time with their family. You've got to get a little bit of downtime because over the weekend, going into Thursday night and a Friday, and then subsequently, the holiday weekend allows threat actors to really step up their activities, because what better way to get you to pay up than to try to blackmail you over a holiday weekend? Get into that, some of that today as well. So without further ado, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, please make sure to do so. And go check out our Substack, jamesazar.substack.com. That's got exclusive content that's only available there, nowhere else. So go and check that out. Now join me for a Monday morning coffee cup cheers, which we all need on a Monday morning, especially one that's April Fool's. See how good your practical jokes are today, world. Coffee cup cheers, y'all. On a Monday, I do two sips. I have to. It gets me in gear. Over the weekend and on Friday, AT&T disclosed that the 73 million records that were available on the dark web that we reported on about 3 weeks ago are actually those of AT&T customers. The reporting that this breach and data set is from 2019. It impacts approximately 7.6 million current AT&T account holders and 65.4 million former account holders. The Dallas, Texas-based company used the Easter holiday to share the update, hoping that it would just fall through the cracks as people were getting ready for the holiday. However, it has not fallen, and it has not deterred the attention of many cybersecurity practitioners who viewed this breach and this confirmation as being extremely troubling. The company said a robust investigation is underway. It's supported by both their internal and external cybersecurity teams. Currently, AT&T does not have evidence of unauthorized access to its system that resulted in the exfiltration of this data. The company is communicating proactively with those impacted and will be offering credit monitoring at their expense. I love that. Late last month, the telco experienced an outage that knocked out cell phone service for many of its customers. AT&T definitely going through a tough patch here. So a few things to take away from this specific data set. One, their threat intel didn't pick up on it. It was third-party threat intel that actually picked up and reported it several weeks ago. Number two, as of right now, meaning from the moment this was kind of put in their face until today, they don't really have yet any sort of information of how this took place, meaning was this an internal threat? Was it external? Was it something in their environment, a potential third-party supply chain company or anything like that that caused this type of breach? We're going to stay tuned to AT&T. We've actually requested more information from them. We sent their PR office a whole set of questions this morning and hoping we'll get some stuff from them in the next few days. Once we get information, I'll keep you appraised to what's going on there. In an additional data breach, Point32 Health, which is the second largest health insurers in the state of Massachusetts, revealed that PII information of more than 2.8 million individuals was stolen in a ransomware attack in April of last year. The attack was identified on April 17th of last year. It's now coming to fruition that nearly a year later, they're understanding the impact of this specific breach that impacted names, addresses, birth dates, phone numbers, social security numbers, health insurance account information, financial account information, medical history, diagnosis and treatment information, meaning pretty much your entire detail with the insurer at this point has been compromised. Point32 Health started notifying impacted individuals in May of last year, informing HHS that more than 2.55 million individuals may have been affected. This week, the company filed a refreshed data breach notice with the Maine Attorney General, updating that number to impacted individuals from 2.55 to 2.86, meaning they found an additional 310,000 records that they did not account for in the original reporting and have adjusted it as well. So there you've got it. You never really know the full impact until you finish your investigation. JetBrains and Team City have been in the headlines a whole bunch over the last several weeks. They've now patched 26 security issues in its Team City build management and CI/CD server. It's taken steps to reduce the risk of these vulnerabilities being exploited in malicious attacks. The version is Team City 2024.03. It was released on the 27th of March. It patches 26 different security problems, according to JetBrains. The company highlighted that it's not sharing the details of security-related issues to avoid compromising clients that keep using previous bug fix and or versions of Team City. So we'll hope that actually sticks. You know, I'd be really interested to hear from like vulnerability management experts about that kind of approach. Is that a good approach? A bad approach? Is it really a secret? I mean, can you update something without the full notes? Can you update something without the notes actually leaking online at this point? Really interested to hear feedback on that. So make sure you get your Team City and JetBrains instances all patched up as soon as you humanly can. Computer sciences have uncovered a shockingly prevalent misconfiguration that's really popular among email spam filtering services like Proofpoint, Barracuda, Mimecast, and others. About 80% of those could be bypassed from a simple misconfiguration. And you might ask yourself what that is. Bypass if the email hosting provider is not configured to only accept messages that arrive from an email filtering service. Now, there's a reason why this doesn't happen. Now, mind you, this is a University of California at San Diego research, unfiltered, measuring cloud-based email filtering bypass. It's something that they're going to be speaking out at an event. It's a cool idea, but they go, why is phishing keep going? Because a lot of businesses, this is where the operational side comes through. A lot of businesses can't afford to turn that on because that disrupts business, because not everyone you interact with has that setting. And what you do is you could turn it on. And I guarantee you, out of that 80% of companies that don't have it, 80% had it on and 80% got so many tickets from the business going, these messages aren't coming through. They're ending in my junk folder. They're in my spam folder. And whitelisting domains didn't become an issue because it's scaled that they just turned it off and assumed the risk because they said, we've got Proofpoint, we've got Mimecast, we've got all these other tools. So while the research is effective, at the same time, this is where there's a disconnection between the academia side of cybersecurity research and the business side of cybersecurity research. And that's really important to understand that context, because what they're saying goes, wow, if we only fixed it, maybe phishing would go away. You can't fix it unless email filtering service is naturally added to every small business in America and offered in order for them to have that. Then if they've got that, then you can turn on that configuration, but a threat actor would find another way to just hijack a domain. So with that being said, you know, I saw this in dark reading. I saw people commenting on it. I was just like, you guys have to understand the difference between a security research paper finding something without taking the business context into it. The business context matters just as much. A malicious backdoor code that's embedded in the popular Linux tool is causing some havoc, according to CISA and Red Hat. The issue CVE-2024-3094 affects the XZUtils, a tool that helps compress large file formats into smaller, more manageable ones for sharing through file transfer. The tool is present in nearly every Linux distribution, according to Red Hat. CISA also said that alongside the open source community, they're responding to reports of malicious code being embedded in the XZUtils versions 5.6.0 and 5.6.1, which may allow unauthorized access to affected systems. CISA is recommending developers and users downgrade XZUtils to an uncompromised version like 5.4.6 stable, until hunt for any malicious activities and report any positive findings to the agency. Red Hat's advisory notes in all caps that certain users should stop usage for work or personal activity immediately, and provided links to updates that can be used to mitigate the vulnerability were made available. So obviously the software supply chain continues to be a difficult one to manage. CISA notified lawmakers on Friday that the recent breach of its chemical plant security tool that was linked to the flawed Avanti product potentially affected more than 100,000 individuals, triggering disclosure to Congress under the federal cybersecurity law. The size of the breach makes it a major incident, according under the threshold established by the Federal Information Security Management Act. Attackers breached the chemical security assessment tool, which houses information about chemical plants, security plans, as well as another CISA system, CISA Gateway, which is the portal for tools to help secure critical infrastructure. The agency said it's also beginning to notify affected people and companies. So this is significant for CISA. As this investigation unfolds, we'll understand that. But again, this is significant. A lot of people trust CISA. They'll put in their controls. They'll be measuring, and all that data is now sitting in the hands of threat actors. It's a scary, scary thought. PyPI over the weekend suspended user registration and creation of new projects to deal with an ongoing malware campaign. PyPI being the index for Python projects, helping developers find and install packages. While thousands of packages remain available, they've been a constant contact, under constant attack by threat actors trying to infiltrate and mimic packages in order for people to download them to build backdoors in the software side of the house. A report by Checkmarks informs that threat actors started to upload the PyPI 365 packages with names that mimics legitimate projects. The packages included malicious codes within the setup.py file that executes upon installation, attempting to retrieve an additional payload from the remote server. Checkmark makes available in its report the full list of malicious entries they found, which contains numerous typo squatting variants for many legitimate packages. And Checkpoint, for their end, list the malicious packages as over 500 and deployed in two different stages. So you want to make sure you cross those as well. Our final two stories of the day: Activision has now enabled two-factor authentication requirements for all people impacted by the recent malware attack on its users. And these are the numbers of all the impacted, Battle.net being the most, with 3.6 million accounts that have been impacted by the malware campaign. And an end of an era for Google Podcasts, which will be retired tomorrow and will be moving to YouTube Music. So all of your subscriptions on Google, if you're listening to the show on Google Podcast, you're going to want to make sure that you're going to YouTube Music and subscribing to the podcast there. You get the audio, video version, you get all the show notes, you get the transcripts, you've got everything available there. You can also go to our Substack. With that being said, a brief goodbye to Google Podcast. Thank you so much. And now we can remove you from our header and footer right there. And make that nice and tighter, maybe. Go check out our Substack. That's where all the exclusive content is available. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern, live with all the latest and greatest. If you have any stories you want us to cover, anything like that, you can always go to our website, cyberhubpodcast.com. Leave information there. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a great week. Have a great rest of your day. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.